Coming to the microphone first, Colonel Bob McGinnis, the Washington, D.C. area. And Bob, let me say happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you, Jimmy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Celebration of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, a very special time. Well, let's get to the news items at hand. United Nations team, an advance team, has gone into Syria. The violence continues. It looks like there's some type of a deadline that was brokered by Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General of the United Nations. Just talk to me about this, Bob. Is Syria going to agree ultimately to a ceasefire here, both sides laying down their weapons, or do you think Bashar Assad's going to continue on?
Well, I think Bashar Assad's going to do what's in his best interest, and that is to do as much as possible to suppress the rebels that he can. Now, of course, that depends as well whether or not the Arabs continue to resupply the rebels, give them more advanced weaponry, which the Russians warn against. And, of course, the U.S., Hillary Clinton said just the other day that we're providing them with communications equipment as well as some intelligence and perhaps some other things that they haven't talked about. So I don't expect that Assad is going to just be pushed in the corner. You know, if he sees a threat, he's going to address it. And that's why the violence around Damascus continues even today.
Well, a concern to me is that Russia is calling, as you indicated, warning against arming the Syrians, the opposition, excuse me. And at the same time, they're bringing another warship into the port there on the Mediterranean coast of Syria. It looks like they're playing both ends against the middle, are they not?
Well, the Russians need the Syrians because they give them access to the Med, and of course that's become a major indication that Russia is reemerging. And of course it also is one of the last vestiges of any type of, I suppose, influence that it has in the region. And of course it's also a way of paying back the Iranians or helping the Iranians, because Syria is a near ally of Iran and something that I think Russia wants to continue to encourage.
Well, and who do we know the opposition to be? I mean, I understand there are reports, Muslim Brotherhood, a connection with the opposition. We don't know what other rogue elements may be involved, but do we have any idea? You're saying the United States giving them information that will help them in their battle against Bashar Assad. Do we know who the opposition really is?
Not really. As you're right, there are many are Sunni by religious persuasion, because that's the vast majority of Syria. And, of course, they're aligned in some cases with the Turks to the north. There is an element of al-Qaeda in there, but I don't know at this point how influential they are. But given the opportunity, they'll clearly try to do whatever they can. Keep in mind, Syria was a conduit of Sunni radicalism into Iraq, going after American forces. So we know that they have that, and then, of course, they have a large element of Shia, and, of course, the Shia are aligned with Iran, and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and the Quds Force are there to assist Bashar Assad. It's not clear that there's any, I suppose, coalescing around any true leadership. There are a number of elements that are claiming credit for being in charge, but that's not clear in my mind as yet.
Well, I was listening to the BBC. I do that often when I walk in the morning. I can pick it up on my cell phone. And I heard a report. They were doing some in-depth conversation about the situation. The Alawites is what the Assad family has come out of, and they say, this report indicated, that it's going to be a battle to the end. If the Alawites give in now, if Bashar Assad resigns, they're going to kill the Alawites. That's part of the mix, is it?
Well, it is, and of course many of the senior leaders in the Assad's government, as well as the generals, are Alawites. And of course the rank and file of the all but the first brigade of the Syrian army are primarily Sunni. So you have, I think, a situation where, unless you have some sort of argument or persuasion that says that these people can go into exile and be able to escape prosecution and so forth, there's no incentive for them to leave. They will stay and they'll fight and, if necessary, die, and, of course, take a lot of their countrymen with them.
Well, this is really a bailiwick of problems there that they're going to have to work out somehow. We'll follow the story because it's going to be an ongoing story. Iran is supposedly wanting to sit down with world leaders, have some type of nuclear talks. I think the United States said Turkey, and then the Iranians said, what about Iraq or possibly China? Is this conversation between the world leaders and Iran and their nuclear program going to come together, and where do you think it will end up?
Good question. The Iranians also suggested Syria and Lebanon, which I think are out of the cards as well. Essentially, it would appear that the Iranians object to having it in Istanbul because of Turkey's relationship with NATO and the idea that they were going to allow a missile radar system to go in there ostensibly to monitor what the Iranians were doing with their rockets. So you have that whole issue. And then, of course, the inevitable effort by Ahmadinejad, Ali Khamenei, and the like, and there in Tehran, to delay any real sanctions. It was at the invitation of the Iranians saying, we want to start the talks that were stopped last fall. But they were stopped because the Iranians wouldn't cooperate. And now Hillary Clinton has said very clearly that if that's what you're doing, if all you're doing is delaying the inevitable, and the inevitable is often unsaid, and that is some sort of military strike, then we're not going to just sit there at the table and talk about the size of the table and the location for the next meeting and what we're going to have for dinner tonight.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this, folks, I got to remind you, Iran is mentioned in Ezekiel chapter 38. We're talking about Syria. That's Daniel chapter 11. Also in Daniel 11, Egypt, Bob, and the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood had a meeting. He's at least a representative of the Muslim Brotherhood, had a meeting with somebody at the White House, and they're involved in diplomatic campaign trying to play themselves up as the key leaders in Egypt, which they are, but that this is a good situation. I don't understand the White House meeting with a terrorist like this.
Well, it is interesting, and it's not only at the White House and some of the national security people, but they met over at the State Department. They met with Undersecretary Burns, who, of course, deals with that part of the world. And so, obviously, somebody opened the door. It had to have come from Secretary Clinton or the president himself saying, you know, let these people in, let's talk to them. Now, out of fairness, the Republican Senator Lindsey Graham and John McCain have met with Egyptian representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood in the last few months, but not there in the Senate. So you've got some recognition by some of these political figures in Washington that the Muslim Brotherhood, one, dominates the parliament in Egypt, and now that they're offering up their own presidential candidate, Shatter, who says that he's going to make Sharia law first and final objective in what he anticipates being his presidency, that is music to the ears of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's music to the ears of, I think, the Islamists that are far to the right of the Muslim Brotherhood, if you can be there. So you have a combination of issues there that, you know, if I were sitting in Israel, I'd be very concerned. And the West, clearly, they're not going to do things that favor our interests. So very problematic time ahead.
Bob, you're a strategic planner. Is this good strategy for the United States?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be encouraging these people by opening my door. That's sending the wrong message. You know, we don't sit down, you know, after Hamas was elected in Gaza, we didn't say, oh, well, they were duly elected. We're going to go, you know, sit down and, you know, see what we can work out. The same thing in Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. We didn't go sit down with them because they were both were terrorists. Well, Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda came from the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. You know, the number one guy in Al-Qaeda today got his, cut his teeth in the Muslim Brotherhood in jail there in Cairo. So you've got a history that's pretty clear. And yet, you know, these people, you know, are going to be very bad for Coptic Christians. They're going to be very bad for what we think is traditional democracy, certainly freedom of speech, as we've seen what they did to the nonprofits that went over there trying to promote liberal democracy. You know, this is bad, bad news. In fact, I'm going to be writing about it next week, trying to expose some of what I think are very bad ideas that we're promoting here.
Well, we'll have that article that Bob will write on our website, prophecytoday.com. It will be a must-read, I'm sure. Bob, literally 15 seconds. What about online graphics saying Al-Qaeda's involved in New York City? Reports out Hezbollah has maybe 300 agents in New York City.
Well, Hezbollah, I'm not surprised, and I've written about that recently. But New York City, the Al-Qaeda thing, I think, is more of a spoof to promote a film than anything else. That would happen in New York, and I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, we'll stay on top of the story as well. Have a great Easter with your family, Bob, and we'll talk again next week.
Well, thank you, Jimmy.